All right, Scott, thanks so much for joining me on the program, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Derek.
Could you tell us a little bit about how you initially got promoted to leader and then what your path was since then?
Yeah, it's a funny story. I had been a rep for about 2.5, maybe 3 months. All right. And I was the number one rep in the company, and I had like broke a record. And I was not a fan of sales leadership at the organization. I didn't think that they were very helpful at all. There was no like training, there was no development and whatnot. And so I very boldly and arrogantly asked for a meeting with the CEO. And so I traipsed into his office and was like, "Hey, how do I become a sales manager here? Because I'm pretty sure I could do way better than this guy who's the current sales manager." Right? Just like, I was totally naive. This is the first job I'd ever had, by the way, right? And this is like 16 years ago, not as much access to, mentors or like community telling you how to behave, right? So after he kind of like, metaphorically slapped me around for not having the most tactful approach, he gave me this list, and the list was like super helpful. And I'm like, "Got it. I'll see you in, a month or two after I do all these things." And so I do all those things, and sure enough, there's like a sales manager promotion coming up, and they don't promote me. They promote somebody else. This person had been there longer, but, was like disorganized, not really a leader. Classic mistake of like promoting somebody who'd been there a lot longer rather than somebody who was better suited for the role. And I was pissed. And it was right around the holidays, and I ended up taking 2 weeks off work and like took a job interview somewhere else. And I was trying to decide, am I going to stay here or like do I need to leave in order to move up? And I'd only been a rep for like 5 months at this point. And I decided to dig my heels in, and my logic was like, this person's going to fail and fail quickly, and I can make it impossible for them to not promote me after she fails by like doing even better. Like, not only am I going to break my own records, I'm going to grab a couple people around me, teach them what's been working for me, and then use that as evidence that I know how to lead people and create good sellers. And so sure enough, that's what happened. I did really well. This person washed out of the role. They ended up promoting me, and off I went. So I actually have only been an AE for 7 months ever in my career out of 16 plus years now.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a really fun story. What do you remember what was on the list you got from the CEO?
Yeah, it was like work on your humility. Number one, lead not just in terms of activity, but also in terms of attitude as well as revenue. Basically kind of start doing the role before you have it. So like teach a couple other people there, work on interdepartmental relations. Like, in my first few months as a sales rep, I was just like focused on closing deals. And it was sort of like, "Well, I make the mess and it's your job to clean it up." Like, that was the like crazy thought process that I had back then, right? So, just a lot of like business maturity needed to happen in a very short period of time. So it's things like that were on the list,
Okay. Those are all, I feel like those are all still relevant.
Yeah, they're totally relevant.
What made you want to become a manager to begin with?
I realized really quickly upon getting into sales that I fucking hated cold calling. And my only solution to it was to get so good at it that I never had to do it again. That was my logic, right? It's like,
Okay.
this is me making, 120, 150 calls a day without a CRM, without dialer, without any of this stuff. I'm like, this is horrible. I don't want to do this. I'd much rather teach other people how to do it. And I'd been in like leadership roles my whole life and in sports and things like that. And, I also didn't want to be a frontline kind of worker bee for the rest of my life. I fancied myself moving up and you know, becoming a management, getting into executive leadership, maybe running my own business one day. And I wanted to do that like now, right? In a very kind of impatient way. And I'm not saying that that mindset is the right one, nor is it a good one for everybody. But for me, it served me really well. Like I have had an increased and heightened sense of urgency compared to other people, you know, my age or in my career for a very long time. And I bet on myself a lot of times along the way by leaving sort of stable opportunities to put more pressure on myself to build something from scratch. And then I get that up and I have this other opportunity over here. I got to move across the country. I don't know anybody. I can do that, right? And, you know, getting lucky and being able to make that work for me. Well, that's kind of where it was born from.
Okay. That's cool. What would you say are some of the early mistakes that you made as a first-time manager?
You know, I had no idea how to lead early on other than the same way I lead on the soccer field, which is just like, you know, a lot of rah-rah and like, let's work harder and, you know, put tons of pressure on people and things like that. Like I would be vilified for leading teams now the way that I did then. You know, I didn't know any better. The one thing that I did know way back then was it still was all about relationships. It was always about having a good dialogue and understanding like each person on my team and how they're wired and how they're different and things like that. So that's some of the mistakes. Still being very siloed and like thinking about how do I get more sales only. So I would be lobbying for comp plans that were, you know, didn't pay retention bonuses and things like that, right? I would, you know, try to get shorter term contracts because that brought in deals to the company. I was just like, oh, well, customer service's job is to retain those, right? And over time, I realized, well, that's very nearsighted, Scott. You bring in better customers, you keep them longer, the business is healthier, you'll ultimately end up making more money. Just dumb early mistakes, you know, like that I had to learn on my own, frankly, you know, over time and just course corrected from one opportunity. Okay, I'm not going to make the mistakes that I made in the last gig. This time I'm going to be better. Then I'd make some new mistakes and be like, I'm not going to make any of those mistakes either. Now I go to the next gig, right? And just kind of kept improving, I think, each time I moved on.
Right. Just as long as you're making new mistakes.
That's right. Yeah.
What's something, all right, so if you were to get promoted today, right, what are some things, you know, thinking about our audience, right, they're all either recently promoted, looking to get promoted soon, what are some things you'd recommend to those folks to get a team tomorrow? Top couple things they should be thinking about or doing.
You know, one of the first things I would do now would be get mentors and coaches and get a sense of a peer community. You know, there was none of that stuff when I started. And so I have really never had much of a mentor, you know, or a coach in my life. So I went through I'd made a lot of dumb decisions, I think, you know, because of that. So if I was just now getting promoted into a sales manager role, I would be all over LinkedIn, like networking with every sales leader I could find, trying to build relationships where I could like text you, you know, in the middle of the afternoon because I had a question or a thought about something, yeah. Right? Or, you know, getting on shows like this so I could interact with people, joining, you know, communities like Rev Genius, Thursday Night Sales, Revenue Collective, Sales Hacker, all of these things, right? And building out that network of peers and even people who are way more senior who've been doing sales leadership a lot longer, that's like the first thing I think that I would be focused on. I'd really encourage people to do that. It's never been easier to access sort of this hive mind than right now.
Right. There's so much wisdom out there. It's so easily accessible.
Yeah.
So how did you do it, given that you didn't have any of those tools?
I just lived the role and trial and error, you know, something worked, something didn't work. Mm-hmm. It probably wasn't until 5-6 years ago, maybe, where I wised up and realized the power of places like LinkedIn and started actively, you know, growing my network and building some of these relationships. I got lucky in some areas, you know, just with people that I met, that I'd run into at a conference, or, you know, my partner in surf and sales, Richard Harris, like I hired him. So he was one of my sales managers, even though he had been in business longer than me and had more experience. So some of those types of people kind of came into my life, but I very actively started doing things different like 5-6 years ago in this respect. You know, other than that, back then I was just like trial and error. I did read a lot, you know, I never really loved like business books. But I read a lot of like leadership books, like coaching books from like, you know, John Wooden, Phil Jackson, Mike Babcock, used to be the coach of the Detroit Red Wings. And there's this great book called The Captain Class that talks about dynasties in every single sport and why they became dynasties, what the makeup of that team looked like. So I kind of became a student of teams and leadership outside of the realm of business, and then would apply some of that into my, you know, management and business practices. But yeah, man, just lots of trial and error and some dumb luck and some good instincts a few times along the way.
I love the concept of like getting outside of the narrow field of like, you know, sales leadership, business.
Yeah.
What are a couple things that I read, by the way, The Score Takes Care of Itself too. Have you read that one?
I have not read that one, but I've heard of this one many times. Yeah.
I think you'd like it.
Yeah. I'm sure I would. Yeah. That's Bill Walsh, right?
Yeah.
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 What are a couple tips that you think you pulled from those books and used to become more effective?
This book, The Captain Class, for example, I was talking about, it found the key ingredient to every sports dynasty was the captain was never the best player. The captain was sort of always this unsung hero who did all of the dirty work and was selfless and like team first and whatnot, kept everybody, you know, kind of together, was the spirit of the team and the emotional like center. And I can remember thinking, oh, well, that explains why the number one reps kind of suck at being a coach, right? And, you know, it's obvious. I think most people in sales leadership now would be like, duh, the number one rep is not necessarily a good sales manager. But I didn't know that, you know, way back when. And I can remember reading this book about sports dynasties and relating it to sales reps. And like, the best sales rep was very rarely somebody that seemed equipped to be a sales manager. And as I promoted sales reps to sales management, it wasn't the best people. It was always people who were like the top 80, 85%, right? So that's one, you know, direct thing. And then the concept of like healthy confrontation, if you will, or healthy disagreement, right? This airing of grievances, maybe said differently, but I never shied away from, these like difficult conversations, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was something that I remember, you know, studying both in like some of these coaching and leadership books outside of the sporting realm, as well as in the sporting realm, right? Like The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, for example, is a really famous leadership book that talks about this. So yeah, not shying away from those conversations. Like I never had a challenge or a problem like, you know, meeting up with you, Derek, to talk about your performance and like being totally transparent and raw with like where you're headed if things don't turn around, right? Stuff like that, you know, and understanding that I needed to have a good relationship and rapport with you in order for me to be as candid with you as I wanted to be, in order for me to push you a little bit harder than you potentially wanted to be pushed, that kind of stuff.
And you feel like that part, just being comfortable with the confrontation, was that just something with you from the beginning, or that's something that you learned from that book and then put into practice?
No, you know, actually, I actually learned it through my health struggles, you know.
Okay.
I got real sick at right before I turned 23 years old, and I pretty much spent age 23 to 27 in the hospital, you know, fighting for my life. I've had a bunch of surgeries and health challenges and stuff. And going through all of that, I just sort of realized, like, what am I worrying about? What is there to be afraid of? What's the worst thing that can happen? Like, the worst thing that can happen is going to be nowhere near as bad as all this bullshit I just dealt with, yeah. Right? So, like, why am I living in fear of this difficult conversation with Derek, where I have to tell him he's underperforming and I have to help him find the solution or else he's not going to be here long term? Like, that conversation is easy compared to the stuff I've been dealing with. So I learned how to lose the fear through the perspective that my health challenges, you know, gave me.
Yeah. I mean, I guess any conversation, it's just words, kind of seems easy after something like that.
Well, even the outcome of the conversation or those words just doesn't seem that dire, right? Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? Derek's mad at me. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what? Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? I'm going to get fired. Okay. I can find another job. Right. And I've tried to go about things with that mindset ever since. You know, I'm not perfect with it, obviously, but you know, I think it's enabled me to take some good risks along the way.
Yeah, it seems like, I think the phrase I saw the other day is asymmetric risk, whereas like having the hard conversation has a tremendous amount of upside, but not that much downside.
Yeah.
If your rep's mad at you, and by the way, have you ever had a rep actually be mad at you because you've had a conversation about their performance?
Not for very long. Certainly in the immediate term, time frame thereafter, right? But they're not going to really get mad at you if you've built the kind of relationship required for them to understand that you're trying to help them, that you care about, you know, their performance and their job and their standing here, right? And it's born out of concern and out of, you know, just wanting them to do better, right? It's different. I think I would have had many people super pissed off at me if they thought all I cared about was them closing a deal so I could get hit my number and I could get paid, right?
Yeah. How did you create that kind of relationship with your reps?
There's no shortcut for that. It's just time spent. You know, time spent at lunches, time spent walking around an office, you know, tapping somebody on the shoulder, how you doing? A lot of time spent listening rather than talking. You know, I naturally kind of assumed like a therapist kind of chair, which is not uncommon for a lot of sales leaders, but it was something that I kind of slid into pretty easily. So people would bring me all their problems and I'd listen and listen and listen and, you know, try my best to give advice or, you know, refocus them on the task at hand kind of thing. You know, just a lot of rapport building, you know, or attempts at rapport building, camaraderie, which was a lot easier to do when I was, you know, 27, 28, 29 years old and didn't have kids and as many responsibilities and stuff like that, right? Like, I could go do stuff like go to happy hour with everybody or go, you know, go kart racing with the team or paintball or whatever, all these silly things that we would do. And now it's much harder for me to get away. So it's very much about and contained in the conversations that we have while we're at work in the office, right? Somebody told me this hack. I got this great tip. I think I was in my first year as a sales manager, and this older gentleman that I was having a conversation with said to me, "Scott, if you want to make your sales reps feel like you care about them, here's the number one question to ask them every single day. How are your kids?" That was the question. And the thought process was, everybody on earth likes to talk about their kids, pretty much.
Yeah. Right?
They're proud of them. They get excited. They get animated, right? And so you cut through, you know, some ice. It's an icebreaker a little bit. Like, "Hey, Derek, like, how your kids doing? Like, you know, did you guys have soccer games this last weekend, right?" And all of a sudden you're talking to me and I'm listening and, you know, I engage in the conversation and, like, you know, next week I remember. I'm like, "Did you guys have soccer this weekend, Derek?" Like, "Oh, your daughter had a, you know, gymnastics event or a play or whatever." And I've used that hack a lot over the years, and it really works, you know. It was a non-traditional tip there that I was given.
Now everyone's going to be saying it, though.
I know, yeah. Right? So that's the thing with any sales motion or leadership tip that works is, like, everybody rushes to it, and then it doesn't work anymore, and we gotta come up with new ones. But hey, that's the cycle.
I think, like, people can probably tell when you're being authentic, though.
I mean, I would hope so. I think, well, the real key is, like, how does somebody tell you're being authentic?
Yeah.
Right?
How do you fake authenticity?
I don't know how you fake authenticity, but I know how you demonstrate authenticity is, you know, eye contact, you know, listening, mirroring what people say, asking follow-up questions, tack on questions, remembering, right, kids' names or what they're into, like Derek's kids into dirt bikes, Scott's kids into music, right? And, you know, you have those kind of dialogues, you start to feel like you're friendlier with people, has been my experience. And that creates kind of a genuine, authentic relationship.
Yeah. I feel like everyone always likes talking about their kids. I don't have kids yet. I got a dog. If somebody asked me how my dog was, I'd be going for 20 minutes.
Yeah, same difference. I'd lump pets into this as well.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you say your superpower is as a leader?
Ooh. My superpower as a leader. I think I do a very good job of bringing people together. So I'm able to, it helps me in recruiting, for example. I'm able to grab really good people, put them next to other really good people. It's almost like assembling a team. I think I'd be a really good GM. So if Peter McGowan of the Giants is listening, and you know, they need a GM intern, I'm your guy. But, like, I think that's one of the things I'm really good at. You know, I've been that way. I feel like I was always the one amongst my friends who'd organize us and help us figure out what we were going to do. You know, whether what sport we were going to play when we were a kid or what party we were going to go to as a teenager, right? And now it's, okay, I can bring this team together. I can build this surf and sales event and community. I can build this Thursday night sales event with Justin and now Amy, right? And that, I think, is really important in growing teams and growing companies. So I think that's my superpower. I'm able to assemble really smart people and they make me look good.
What do you think it is that makes you good at that? What do you do that might be different from everybody else?
I don't know what I do different than anybody else, but I certainly am not afraid to ask or put it out there or take the initiative in trying to do it, right? I think I'm quite good at letting a very short period of time go by between idea and taking action, mm-hmm. right? So, for example, if I learned today that I got budget to hire a sales manager. Boom, like these three or four names would pop into my head and I would literally message you like right now. Like I would wait and try to think of like, okay, I got to put together the perfect message, or let me do some research and take my time and figure out if Derek's available or not. I would just text you and be like, Derek, do you want to be a sales manager? I got a gig for you.
Right? Like texting on the way out of the meeting.
Exactly. That's exactly how that image really resonates with me, because like, that's absolutely how I operate.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Because you're like, Scott has definitely messaged me a few times about sales leader opportunities. That's totally how I am.
You also strike me as somebody who just, you're not afraid to do the things that might make other people feel vulnerable or embarrassed. Like, you're just like, I'm going to do that thing because I need it to happen. And I don't, you know, I don't care what anyone thinks.
Well, I think all of us would like to pretend like we don't give a fuck, period, about what anybody thinks. I would love to pretend that I don't care at all, but I definitely care to some degree. I don't think I care that much anymore, especially if it is something that I feel is right and kind of needs to be said or done. I'm definitely more emboldened now than I was when I was first starting my career out, right? Like I have
more emboldened than that 4 month, you know, 22-year-old who walked in and demanded a sales job.
That was more just like arrogance and stupidity. Okay. Now is more like, okay, I have a book of business here or a resume, if you will, that shows I know what I'm doing and I'm talking about it, what I'm talking about, I think. So I'm not afraid that if I say something, I'll never get hired again. Right. Mm-hmm. Within reason, of course. Right. But, you know, so I talk about things, for example, on LinkedIn that other people don't talk about. Like I talk about equity and how the game is kind of rigged. I talk about how CEOs and founders don't treat VPs of sales very well.
Yeah.
Right? I talk about how, you know, sales reps and sales managers and whatnot, like, you know, get stuck in the middle and don't get the training they deserve and things like this, right? I talk about race and injustice and political issues that people would tell you not to talk about. It's like, I don't know. I am who I am. I speak about the things that I'm passionate about. And, you know, I'm not going to be silenced.
I'm glad that you are like that, man. I think we need more people like that. And having been part of some of your Twitter conversations on the equity issue, like, yeah. It's not out there enough. So appreciate you doing that.
You know, hopefully, you know, it's not just me who's leading this charge by any means, but like, hopefully if I'm speaking up about it, maybe that helps you be more confident to speak up about something that you see or experience. And that has a domino effect or a snowball effect. And, you know, then Nikki speaks up, then Sarah speaks up, then Justin's right. And, you know, I'm hoping to be a part of that kind of sales revolution, if you will.
Yeah, it's really a movement. It is.
Yeah.
You talked about the list that your CEO gave you at the beginning of this episode. What do you think would be on the must-do list for somebody looking to get promoted now?
Well, you've got to be really good at your current job. Okay. You don't have to be number one, but you need to be really good at it. And the quickest way for me to figure out whether somebody was ready to be a sales manager is I would dangle the idea in front of them that I'm thinking about them. And the people who are not ready will immediately start sucking at their current role. And they just get all fixated and focused on being a manager, right? And the people who were ready would continue to excel at their current role while also starting to show more demonstrable leadership qualities and whatnot. It just would show me that they're capable of a larger degree of multitasking and compartmentalization and all this kind of stuff, you know? That's the very first thing that, you know, comes to mind is you've got to be good and stay good at your current role. The second thing would be just start helping people. Help your neighbor to the left of you. Help your neighbor to the right of you, right? Have minions, if you will. Have your own little mini team inside of a team, right? So if I'm trying to show that I can help other people, and Derek and Justin and KD are my buddies who are selling with me, I'm going to teach you what's working for me. And then I'm going to be able to show everybody in the company, like, look, you know, I got all these guys following along with what I'm up to here, right? The third thing would be start now in terms of forming really good relationships with other departments, other people in the company, right? Because at some point there's going to be a meeting where internal promotion candidates are going to be discussed, right? Yeah. And what you want to have happen is when Scott says, well, I'm thinking about Derek for this sales manager role, the head of customer service and the head of marketing is like, oh yeah, Derek is a no-brainer. He's so great. He's always asking questions about this to help the CS team. Oh yeah, he gives me good ideas on the marketing side. That's what you want. You want these advocates in there who are confirming that your boss is about to make a smart decision. And that's something that virtually nobody does that would be really smart for people to do.
Yeah, that's great. So you want champions in, I guess, call it like neighboring departments.
Yes.
And then when you say be good at your current role, are you looking just for somebody who consistently hits their number? Or do you still want them like top 10% or?
I don't even think you have to be top, I don't think you have to be top 10%. Like, you should be able to be hitting your quota consistently. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to me, like, depends on the size of the organization, but like maybe top 20%, somewhere in the top 20% of the sellers in your team. I think you should be consistently hitting quota. You should have had a breakout month or quarter or two where you maybe were number one once, whatever, just to demonstrate that you have this like superstar capacity or the capacity to close, you know, one really big deal. Like, that might be important in your company.
Sure.
But I'm just mostly looking for like consistency, you know, good, consistent quota hitting performance. You don't have to be the superstar. I'm looking for all the other stuff on top of that.
Cool. And then get some champions. So they're telling your boss, you got to promote this guy.
That's a secret hack right there.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Anything else that you think someone should go do?
I mean, you got to put your own needs to the side and start recognizing that everybody else's needs now come first. You know, and that's not easy for some people. So you need to be able to be very self-aware and say, yeah, I'm good with that. Or, ooh, yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to do that. You know, because if you get in that role and you're worrying about your needs first, you're going to be in big trouble. You're not going to be long for that role. You're going to have a revolt on your hands as well.
Yeah, did you see that Lencioni, so Patrick Lencioni, who wrote Five Dysfunctions of a Team, came out with a new book called The Motive, which is not. Like, I haven't read it yet. I've read everything else by him. I think it's great, but it's about what's your motive for wanting to be a leader? And as far as I can tell, it's that. It's like, am I doing this to help people? Like, to help make my team better? Or am I doing it to make myself better? And I think what you're saying is, like, if you're in that first bucket, you're going to have a good time. If you're in that second bucket, you're going to have a bad time.
Yes. I think that's the case. Although now I think that we've evolved to the point where I can put your needs first and want to help you and help as many people as possible. And in turn, that helps me be a better person. So I want to continue to get better on my own shit. So I become better as well. If that makes sense.
Yeah, they're not mutually exclusive.
Yeah, I don't think they're as mutually exclusive anymore.
Cool, man. Anything else that you would, you know, you'd recommend for audience? Books, something to check out, something to do?
you know, I think that now is the time to, I mentioned this before, but like now is the time to find coaches, mentors, leaders that you like and align yourself with them. Whether that's, you know, paying for a private coach, you know, joining private communities like Patreon, like I have a Patreon, Kevin Dorsey has a Patreon, you know, Revenue Collective is a paid community or free communities out there like Sales Hacker, Rev Genius, Thursday Night Sales, Surf and Sales to some extent. I really can't stress enough like what you're missing out on by not taking advantage of the vast network and amount of information and help that is out there. I think when I was coming up in sales, especially sales leadership, it was like, here's what works for me and I'm not going to tell anybody else what's working, right? Like I can remember, you know, some companies in San Francisco just hated the other companies on the other side of San Francisco and there was no knowledge share going on. That doesn't exist anymore. Like I think the sales and sales leadership profession is now like open sourced in the way code is. Everybody is willing to share their tips and tricks and secrets, and to not take advantage of that right now is just stupid, right? So if you're just newly promoted as a manager, you've got to do this. If you're hoping to get promoted soon, you might as well start now. If you've been in the game for a really long time, you probably should dig into these places and get with the times.
Cool. Vinay, thanks so much for coming on, sharing your wisdom. Like, this is all really important. You'd said earlier that managers don't get nearly enough training. And sure. It's hard because all the info is out there. Go join these communities. Join, you know, if you're out there, join Scott's, is it Patreon? Is that how you say it?
Patreon.
All right. I read it, but I've never heard anyone say it out loud.
Hey, who knows? Maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong. I'm pretty sure it's Patreon, though.
You're probably right. Yeah. The knowledge is out there. Just got to go get it. So thanks so much for coming on and sharing yours.
Sure thing.
Really appreciate you, man.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you'll probably like the Next Level Private Mastermind. It's a small group of newish sales leaders who are helping each other grow faster and become better. Each week, we cover a specific topic and troubleshoot actual issues new leaders run into. The link is in the show notes or go to derekjankowski.com/mastermind. Thanks.